This message comes from OnPoint's sponsor, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you qualify, and if rates go up, your rate stays the same. But if rates go down, your rate also drops. To learn more, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Once upon a time, you pretty much could not shop on a Sunday or even after five on a weekday. The jeweler was on one side of town, the appliance store on the other. Well, that was definitely then. Now, more and more, we shop from our sofas, our desks, even our beds, all online. It's gotten so easy that maybe it's too easy. People are buying so much, you can almost hear the landfills groaning under the weight of all that waste. This hour on Point, causes, costs, and consequences of our online shopping mania. You can join us on air or online. Okay, fess up. Are you an online shopaholic? Do you buy just what you need or maybe a lot more than you need? Are your closets bursting because of the ease of one-click shopping? Are you drowning in stuff? Or maybe is this yet another one of those diseases of affluence? Are you struggling to make ends meet and feel a little bit more than disgusted by all of this? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining me now from San Francisco is Alana Samuels. She's staff writer at The Atlantic. Her latest piece is called "We Are All Accumulating Mountains of Things: How Online Shopping and Cheap Prices Are Turning Americans into Hoarders." Right now, it happens to be one of the most popular stories on The Atlantic's website, for good reason, we think. We have a link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Alana, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna.
Okay, so first of all, start us off with the story, or your own story, of increased consumption in your life. How much more are you buying now that it's so easy online?
Well, I consider myself an environmentalist, but I am buying a lot more. It's just so easy to buy stuff online. You know, as you said, you can do it at any time. You can do it on your phone. You can do it on the bus. You can talk to your Alexa and say you can buy stuff. And, you know, things are so cheap that you just buy them and kind of don't think about it. You kind of convince yourself that you need them. And you buy them online, they show up on your door two days later, and then you have them. And you, if you don't use them, you stick them in a drawer or you give them a Goodwill, and you kind of don't think twice about it.
So if I may, I'm looking at your piece here right now. And can we fess up with a little bit more details? Because you put it in The Atlantic, so you're going to put it on Point. So in the past few months alone, what have you bought?
Okay. Well, part of this was because of Prime Day. So they had Kindles 40% off. And my Kindle has been acting a little odd lately. So I bought a new one, stuck it in a drawer for when my current Kindle dies. I bought a smartwatch for $18, I must add. I bought an electric space heater. I bought some ear pods. Again, you know, only a couple, 10 bucks or so. I actually bought a compost bin to replace another compost bin that I had that wasn't working. And probably the most embarrassing thing is I bought a book about hiking. It was only $2. I bought it used, but I went home to my parents' house and found the exact same book in a box in their basement.
I appreciate your honesty about that one, especially. Now, you didn't return any of these items, but did you use them?
No. Well, some of them. The Kindle I haven't used yet. The smartwatch does not really work, so I don't use that one. The space heater I used until I didn't need it anymore because we moved to another office that wasn't as cold. The ear pods, no. The compost bin I do use, and I did give my old compost bin to Goodwill. And the book about hiking I have used. So 50-50, I'd say.
Okay. So, I mean, you know, on the one hand, maybe you're a little sheepish about admitting how much you've purchased in the last few months alone. But on the other hand, I mean, as we read in your reporting, obviously you're not alone, right? The amount that Americans are purchasing and consuming has grown tremendously since the early 2000s.
Yeah, it's really interesting if you look at the statistics. And, you know, it's a lot of it is certain equipment or certain stuff that's really easy to buy online, like telephone and related communication equipment. We've spent $70 billion last year, and that's a 4,000% increase from 2002, which is just, like, mind-boggling. Personal care products, we spent $133 billion. That's a 76% increase from 2002. And, you know, to find people to talk to for the story, I went on Twitter, and I just kind of put in online shopping and an addict, and it was like every, it seemed like every user had fessed up to being an online shopping addict. You know, for the story, I talked to this one guy who had written on Twitter that he sometimes wakes up in the middle of the night and buys things and doesn't even realize it until it shows up on his doorstep.
Wow. Okay. So there's so much to dig into here. Let's talk a little bit about how the major online retailers are actually helping us down this path of mass consumption. I want to play a little bit of sound here. This is a 2014 commercial from the online retailer Wayfair. Turns out, according to Wayfair, you don't even have to know what you want or what you need before you buy it because they know what you should buy.
Wayfair, you got just what I need. Everything for my home, you got it for me. Wayfair and the shipping was free. Now my home's the home I wanted to be.
Shop everything home at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, you've guessed what I need. They already know. Okay, well, moving over to, you know, the biggest online retailer there is, Amazon. Now, they, of course, have one-click shopping, which we're going to talk about in a second, but it's even easier than that now, right? Because they have Amazon's Echo and Alexa penetrating the consumer market. Here's a 2016 commercial where Alexa is helping a mom shop and then shop, and then shop some more.
Alexa, order more dog food.
Based on your order history, I found Taste of the Wild dry dog food with roasted bison and venison. It's $53.69 total. Would you like to buy it?
Yes. Alexa, what are your deals?
I have several exclusive deals, including Lindor Chocolate Deluxe Gift Box. Would you like to buy it?
Yes.
And yes, and yes, and yes. You know, I keep thinking, Alana, that if you throw some kids into the picture there, who knows what's going to show up at your doorstep 24 hours later. But tell us a little bit more about how these companies are, since they've, you know, how they're aggressively trying to lower the barriers between you and parting with your money for things that you may or may not need.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the big things here is the free shipping, which we heard about in the Wayfair ad there, which made me want to dance. You know, Amazon launched this Prime program in 2005 that was this idea that if you're a member of the club, you get this kind of, quote, free shipping. And all these other retailers to compete, you know, had to then launch free shipping. You know, I think for most people, if they go online and start buying something, they see it doesn't have free shipping, they don't buy it. And so it's just so easy. You click on something and it ends up in your door and you think, oh, I didn't even have to pay for that to come to my door because you're a Prime member, because the retailer offers it. So that's part of it. You know, I think part of it is also just the Alexa. You know, you can talk to your device and order things. A lot of these companies have mobile apps, so you can order it, you know, when you're lying in bed or wherever you are. And you know, there have been a few stories. There's one, I think, last week about a girl in Arizona or Utah who ordered $300 worth of toys without her mother knowing, and the toys just showed up on her doorstep. And I had a friend whose daughter, you know, talked to the Alexa and ended up ordering some toys as well. So, you know, it's so easy now that even a kid can do it.
I mean, we're spending, I'm seeing from your reporting, to the tune of $240 billion in 2017, twice as much as in 2002?
Yeah, and you know, a lot of it is on, we're spending more and stuff is cheaper. So we're buying more stuff. You know, you can buy $5 jeans now from a site like Wish.com from China. And you can buy so many pairs of those for what you would have gotten one pair of jeans for, you know, a decade or two ago.
Well, yeah, and that gets to another point that you have in your story here, that it's so easy and it's cheaper. So maybe because of those two lower barriers to acquiring things, people also don't return stuff as much, right? So you're buying those five pair of jeans, you might use one, and then the other four just end up sitting in your closet.
Yeah, they end up sitting in your closet, or you kind of rationalize it and say, oh, I'll just give it to Goodwill or Salvation Army. And, you know, you give it there and then you feel a little bit better about shopping because you think, you know, I'm buying stuff, but I'm kind of recycling it. Whereas, you know, actually a lot of textiles and stuff that goes to Goodwill ends up in the landfill.
Okay. So this is the point, Alana, where I have to admit, like, my heart kind of seizes with a panic for our planet, right? Because, I mean, seriously, like you said, you're an environmentalist at the beginning. I think, like, most people want to think of themselves as environmentalists. But as you report, Americans put 16 million tons of textiles in the municipal waste stream, 68% increase from 2000. We threw away almost 35 million tons of plastic, a 35% increase from 2000. I mean, and over that same time, and that's data you got from the EPA, over that same time, the population of the country grew just 14%. So we are absolutely consuming and wasting more than the rate at which the nation itself is growing. That sounds to me like completely unsustainable.
Yeah, it's kind of terrifying. I always think of the Pixar movie WALL-E. You know, the premise is kind of that humans bought all this stuff from this mega corporation called By and Large, and the planet was so full of stuff that they basically had to leave. And, you know, I think to some degree that's kind of coming true. I mean, we just have so much stuff. And, you know, there are a couple scary things about this. One of them is that, you know, Americans shop a lot, but Amazon and Alibaba and other online shopping sites are doing really well in China and India. And, you know, this is not just an American phenomenon. And it's also interesting that, you know, you think of a generation that grew up with smartphones and iPods and or iPads, you know, they're very used to buying stuff online. So maybe people in their 30s or 40s and 50s now are a little hesitant or do it less or still like going to stores. But this younger generation, as they get older, they're going to shop online so much more even than we are. So it seems like it's only going to increase.
Right. I mean, possibly exclusively, right? Because we're already seeing a lot of stories and maybe you know folks out there who they buy all their clothes online. They get them shipped and they try them on and you know maybe they take an Instagram pic and then return. Some of them return them and the others just throw them in their closet. I mean, they know no other way of shopping.
Right, exactly. And I think the free returns is also a big part of it. You know, you think, oh, I can just return this if I don't like it. And then, you know, it's kind of a pain to return things. You have to print out a label. You have to go to UPS or the post office. And if something's, you know, $5 or $10, it's more trouble than it's worth. So you save it or you think, I'll give it as a gift to someone. Or you just kind of, you know, don't think about it. Sometimes I think people think they're going to return things and then they just kind of, you know, don't do it in time, and then they end up in their closet.
Well, we are talking about whether or not America is becoming a nation of hoarders or at least shopaholics because it's become so easy to shop online. You're hearing Ilana Samuels there. She's staff writer, or Samuels, I should say. She's a staff writer at The Atlantic, and her newest story is titled "We Are All Accumulating Mountains of Things, How Online Shopping and Cheap Prices Are Turning Americans into Hoarders." Definitely want to know if you find yourself buying more than you used to because it's so easy to do it online, and whether or not you're happy about it or all of a sudden you're thinking, I have too much stuff, and what are the consequences of that? I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
This message comes from On Point's sponsor, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Introducing their all-new Rate Shield approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Quicken Loans will lock your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply. Based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org number 3030.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We do long-form interviews with the people behind the best books, pop culture, journalism, and more, so you can get to know the people whose work you love. You'll find Fresh Air on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking about whether or not America is becoming a nation of hoarders because it's so easy, almost effortless, to buy things online these days. We're speaking with Ilana Samuels. She's staff writer at The Atlantic, and her newest story is titled, "We Are All Accumulating Mountains of Things, How Online Shopping and Cheap Prices Are Turning Americans into Hoarders." And before the break, Ilana mentioned the fabulous 2008 film WALL-E, one of my favorites, the Pixar film. And you know, you remember it's the movie where humanity has basically junked the planet with so much garbage, so much consumption that human beings have been forced to flee into space, leaving robots back on Earth like little robot WALL-E to wander around heaps of electronic devices that play commercials from the early days of the human migration into space because he's trying still to fulfill his programming and clean up all that garbage.
Too much garbage in your face? There's plenty of space out in space. B&L Starliners leaving each day. We'll clean up the mess while you're away.
That's from WALL-E in 2008. Alana Samuels, let me just ask you, I mean, let's talk a little bit more about what the environmental consequences are to all this consumption. I mean, is it becoming a problem in municipal waste sites or around the country?
Well, one of the things that people told me is that certain things end up in the waste stream that are not good to end up in the waste stream, like lithium batteries are in a lot of things that we buy now. And if those are disposed of just in the trash, they can start fires. They actually burned down a municipal waste treatment center in California in 2016. Another thing is that China had been processing a lot of the world's exports of waste paper and metals and plastic and all this stuff. And last year they said, yeah, we don't want this anymore. We want to protect the environment. And so all these sites across the country and, you know, across the world really are left with this trash that they used to be able to just send to China and forget about. And now they can't.
Yeah.
I think it is a problem. And you know, it's going to become a growing problem as these places figure out what to do in this kind of post-China accepting trash world.
Well, let's take a call here. Susanna is calling from Norfolk, Virginia. You're on the air, Susanna.
Hi, Meghna.
Hi, Susanna. What's your thought today?
I've got a lot of thoughts, actually, and this is such a great topic that I'm passionate about. I absolutely agree that as a society, we are buying a lot more, not what we really need, but just things that we want. And I'm very concerned about the fact of the environment and the ramifications, because all I see on trash day are tons of cardboard boxes and styrofoam coming out everywhere. And I think it's just disgusting that retailers still use the styrofoam and packing. Can't we do something to collectively force them to use more of a cardboard or paper product, number one? Secondly, I'm also concerned about the economic impact. I love to go to a store and buy something. I can see it, feel it, touch it, try it on, know exactly what I want, come home with one little bag that I will reuse instead of all the container and packaging materials. The other aspect, our kids that are in their teens and young 20s, I think they're becoming socially inept because they're communication skills and social skills are really not progressing if they're never going out to a store, communicating, talking with associates, chatting about an item. I think they're losing that ability to contact properly. So that worries me.
Well, Susanna, can I just jump in here for a second? Because you've given us a lot to think about, and I really appreciate it. I mean, I can imagine there are a lot of people out there listening saying, oh, no, not that again. People being, you know, people freaking out about young kids not being able to socialize because they're on their phones all the time. But Alana Samuels, I mean, sometimes I still like to go to the store to buy my milk. I mean, just because, you know, I know the people who work at my corner store and it's nice to talk to them. I mean, is there anything to that?
It's funny you say that because grocery is kind of the next frontier for delivery. And, you know, I want to check back with you in 5 years and see if you still say that. But, you know, I think there are some things about shopping online that people really like. And maybe you're not interacting with an associate, but you can see reviews. You know, you can't really see reviews in a store. And you have this kind of endless inventory. So maybe you go to a store and you look at something and, you know, you want a certain thing, it's not there. You know you can get whatever you want online. So I don't know. I think, you know, it's sad that stores are closing and, you know, there are all these spaces that are going to be empty. But I don't know that there's a huge societal problem with people shifting online from stores. I think it's just change, you know, like we used to go to the Main Street in a town, and now we go to malls, and now we're going to go online.
Yeah,
so
well,
changing.
I mean, I think the big change would be for the people who work in the retail industry, though, right? And where their jobs are going to go, and if they'll have them, and, you know, is it the same thing? Do you get a same living wage working in an Amazon fulfillment center? I don't know.
I mean, the answer is you don't. Yeah.
You don't. I mean, that's where the huge change is really going to be felt in terms of one of the negative impacts. But Alana Samuels, if you could just stand by for a second, I want to bring in another voice into this really interesting conversation. April Lane Benson. She's a psychologist who specializes in the treatment of compulsive buying disorder and founder of Stopping Overshopping LLC. We've got a link to her website at onpointradio.org. And by the way, she's author of To Buy or Not to Buy, Why We Overshop and How to Stop. April Lane Benson, welcome to On Point.
Thanks so much for having me, Meghna.
It's great to have you. So have you seen a change or an increase in people who come to you saying, I'm struggling with how much I'm shopping, and it's gotten harder since online retail has grown so much?
I have absolutely seen an enormous increase in the number of people for whom this is becoming a serious problem because of online shopping and the 24/7 availability.
Really? And so
like any other drug, availability, accessibility, that's when you use. Huh. And for some people, shopping is really a drug.
See, I was under the impression that for many people, part of the draw to it, right, of shopping in general was they get to go to the store. There's the thrill of the hunt, the physical act of looking through all the goods. And that's one of the things that turned them into shopaholics, which isn't necessarily there with online shopping. And yet it's still as compelling, if not more.
I think it is there with online shopping. There are eBay auction sites. The thrill of the hunt is there. You want to outbid. I do think the same kinds of needs, if you need to best the competition, it's there. If you need to see a million things, it's easier online.
So what are the consequences of that then?
Financial consequences are the ones that we think of the most. People are up to their eyeballs in debt, not so much money for retirement. There are other consequences, friction within the family, parent-child, spouses, interpersonal consequences, somebody who is withdrawing from people because of embarrassment about how much stuff they're buying, emotional consequences, anxiety, guilt. It's a serious problem.
Yeah. Alana Samuels, what's your thought about that?
You know, it's funny because I actually hate shopping in person. But there is something about shopping online that I really enjoy. You know, from my research, I know humans get this dopamine hit from buying stuff online. And then you also have this delayed gratification, right? So you order something and then 2 days later it shows up on your door. So it's like this dopamine hit all over again. So, you know, and in terms of embarrassment, I think it's really interesting because you have all these kind of, quote, Instagram influencers, right? And basically what they do, my colleague just had a story about this, basically what they do is they promote brands online. Teens are doing this as a summer job. And so, you know, some people might be embarrassed about it, but I think for some people it's almost something they're proud of. You know, I can buy this stuff and I can look good in it and look at me on Instagram or Facebook or wherever buying all this stuff.
Hmm. Let's take a quick call here. Julia is calling from Topsom, Maine. You're on the air.
Hi, Meghna.
Hi, Julia. What's your thought today?
Oh, my thoughts are I am an Xennial, actually, sort of in between Generation X and Millennial. And although I did grow up with a bit of social media, and I do understand what you're commenting on about the dopamine hit with the online buying, I have an opposite effect. I get a good, healthy fear of that one-click shopping. Partly is, you know, that feeling when you have to go through all of your closet. And, you know, I did a purge of my life a couple years ago, but it took many years to work up to that point to get rid of everything because it's so overwhelming. And having said that, I mean, I think that, you know, another big fear of mine with the online shopping, even as an Xennial, is the fact that, you know, it just leaves me open to a bit more opportunity for hackers. I know that a lot of these sites are considered safe, but for me, that is partly what deters that, as well as I like to touch, feel, and try on those things.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up with sort of a depression era mindset passed down from my family, even though they did have middle class income. You know, my grandparents did end up making something for themselves, but, you know, they reused every single Ziploc bag that they had used before until they couldn't anymore.
Yeah. Julia, just let me jump here. I have to say you're a woman after my own heart, a security-minded person who wants to hold on to things for as long as possible and not wanting to get overwhelmed with too much stuff. Thank you. You're speaking my language, Julia. Thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Adam, who's calling from Buffalo, New York. You're on the air, Adam.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem. Do you find yourself shopping online more and more these days?
I do, but I have to say it has the opposite effect. My consumption and energy use, I think, has diminished. I'll give an example. Before the internet, I would drive around to maybe 3-4 stores to look at different hiking boots, using gas, spending about half a day while there, browsing other items that might be on the bargain rack, and possibly purchasing other items that I didn't intend to buy. Now I'll research the exact thing I want, get it, and it's shipped to my house in a truck that has, hundreds of other items. So I think the energy consumption is less than what it was, and I certainly buy less things.
Adam, that is an excellent point. Thank you so much for calling in. Alana Samuels, is that something that you looked at? Because honestly, I hadn't thought of what Adam said, that, if you're not driving around from store to store as much as you used to, that perhaps if you're mindful about how much you are buying, that overall maybe your environmental impact might be either balanced out or perhaps possibly even less?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's possible. There is still someone delivering the package to your house, but they're probably taking a more direct route than you took if you went to 5 stores. It was interesting because I looked into cardboard consumption and was curious if we're consuming more cardboard because of all these packages. And actually, it's about the same because cardboard used to go to stores, and they would take the stuff out of the boxes and recycle that cardboard, and now it just goes to your house. So it's actually about the same, which is kind of to the caller's point, some things are maybe about even.
Okay. April Lane Benson, one more quick question for you. I mean, if you said you're seeing many more people come to you with concerns about their shopping tendencies because of online shopping, I mean, how do you advise them on what to do and how to manage it?
Well, there's a lot to do. They need to understand what their overshopping is all about, how it began, what triggers it, what the consequences are. They need to develop some skills about what to do when the urge strikes. And bottom line, they really need to think through the idea that you can never get enough of what you don't really need.
You can never get enough of what you don't really need. Tell me more about that.
Compulsive buying, sometimes shopping is really like looking for love in all the wrong places. Maybe we're shopping because we need to feel more self-esteem. We need to feel love and affection. No amount of shopping is going to meet that need unless it's shopping for ideas and experiences rather than goods and services.
Huh. Well, we are talking about online shopping, how easy it's become, and how it's drastically increased the amount of consumption and purchasing going on in America, many billions of dollars a year more. You're hearing from April Lane Benson. She's a psychologist who specializes in the treatment of compulsive buying disorder. And from Alana Samuels, a staff writer at The Atlantic, who wrote about this. Her article is "We Are All Accumulating Mountains of Things." If you two can stand by for a second, there's one more voice I want to pull in here. William Rogers. He's joining us from San Francisco, and he's president and chief executive officer of Goodwill San Francisco, San Mateo, and Marin, California. William Rogers, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for having me.
So delighted to have you because, again, I keep, when I imagine all these millions and billions of items being purchased by people every year, my next question is, where is it all going, the stuff that we're not keeping? There's a giant ecosystem of stuff out there. How have things changed for you at Goodwill since it became so easy for people to buy?
So I think it's a really interesting question. And I think one of the things is that we are seeing a higher level of donations. Our donations were up last year by about 2%, but that was in the context of 3 of our larger donation sites us closing those. And so we still saw a 2% increase year over year. And a lot of that are things that people are purchasing online and then are donating to Goodwill. So the good news is that we're a nonprofit, we're a social enterprise, we hire people in our businesses as a training ground, so folks who would otherwise be unemployable. So there's some good, a lot of good coming from that. On the other hand, when folks are, what happens upstream with manufacturers and when people are manufacturing cheaper goods, and those, some of those things are not reusable or recyclable, that creates a downstream problem.
Right.
So at the end of the day, we know that the resale business is a growing industry, a significantly growing industry. We know that about 16 to 18% of Americans are going to shop thrift this year. And so that's a growing industry. And so the other piece of this is that there are a lot of folks who don't have credit cards. There are a lot of low-income folks who are not participating in the online economy. And what happens when they're able to go to a thrift store or come to Goodwill is that they're able to get items that people have discarded, but they would otherwise not be able to get at even a cheaper price, in fact, than people have spent online.
The 245 blue Nicole Miller cocktail dress that you showed Alana when she came to visit you?
You got it. That's exactly right. And we're not selling that for $245.
Well, hang in there, William Rogers, because we have to take a break here. You cottoned on to something that I want to explore more about people who may not be directly participating in all this excess consumption, because it's an important point. William Rogers is President and Chief Executive Officer of Goodwill San Francisco, San Mateo, and Marin in California. We're also joined by April Lane Benson and Alana Samuels as well, and we are talking about online shopping and how it has increased the amount of consumption that Americans do dramatically every year, and what are the consequences of that. Definitely want to hear from you if you're shopping more or if you're really repulsed by all the consumerism all around you, online, all the time. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here, and on the latest episode of How I Built This, how Stuart Butterfield failed in two companies, pivoted, and then built two amazing new companies, Flickr and Slack. Check out How I Built This wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about online shopping and whether or not the ease of it has turned us into a nation of hoarders. At the very least, it's drastically increased the amount we're spending and how much we consume. We're speaking with Alana Samuels. She's staff writer at The Atlantic. She's written about this. Her new story is titled, We're All Accumulating Mountains of Things. Also with April Lane Benson. She's a psychologist who specializes in the treatment of compulsive buying disorder. And in addition, joining us is William Rogers. He's president and CEO of Goodwill San Francisco, San Mateo, and Marin. And I'm going to get to all of you in just a second, but we've got a lot of comments coming in here. A listener on Facebook, Ernie Tucker, says, when you live in a small rural town where Walmart and the Tractor Supply Company are your best choices for shopping, and it's a 170-mile round trip to Trader Joe's, online shopping is a huge benefit. That's from Ernie Tucker. And then on our website, onpointradio.org, Creaker writes, I wonder how many hours, miles, wear and tear on cars we save from no longer endlessly plodding from store to store. Online shopping is very surgical for me. I can find exactly what I want, order the thing I need, and get out. And Creaker, I say congratulations to you, because when I try to shop online, I find myself building spreadsheets. I was looking for a humidifier the other day, and there were so many choices. I built a spreadsheet for my top 20 choices, and you have to look at all the reviews and all the stars, and you have to figure out which reviews are fake and which reviews are real. And all of a sudden, I found out I had spent like 6 hours looking for a humidifier where I should have just gone to the Target and bought the one that was $19.99. So Creaker, if you know how to make me more efficient online, an online shopper, that would be great. All right, William Rogers, let me turn back to you because my own personal paralysis when online shopping aside, I do want to ask you, you were getting to something much more important about how a lot of people, by virtue of their income or not having a credit card, are not participating in this mass consumption that the digital world has unleashed. And yet, are they still somehow benefiting from it? Is that what you were getting to?
Yeah, so they're sort of the forgotten consumer, right? We're focused a lot on online shopping, and in fact, there are many people who are not able to participate in online shopping. But what they are able to do is they're able to benefit from folks who have purchased things online and then no longer need them, and they're able to get them even at a cheaper price than you would online. So, for example, about 20% of what we get in terms of electronics accessories, iPhone cases, about 20% that we get are unopened or unused. So if somebody paid $10 for that iPhone case or $15 for that iPhone case online, and you have somebody who is very low income and they can come in and get that same item that is unopened for $3 and then that gets used, there's a benefit there to folks who are not participating in as actively in the online economy.
But on the other hand, though, are you at a point at Goodwill? Have the amount of donations risen to the point where you can't resell all of it, that it's even too much for this secondary market?
Well, we find that, I mean, our mission, again, is people with barriers to employment, and what we do is we have both a people mission and an environmental mission. And so what we do is we recycle every single thing that we possibly can. So if you look at something like electronics, we diverted about 2.2 million pounds of electronics from local landfills last year, and because we do remanufacturing and refurbishing of computers, right? And so that means that even if you can get a computer for $250 at Best Buy, you can get one for $50 through Goodwill. So what we're finding is that we have a lot of consumers, and not all of the consumers are low income. A lot of our consumers are treasure seekers. We really have two types of consumers.
Yeah.
They're treasure seekers and they're value shoppers. And so we do everything that we can to either recycle or reuse every single item that we get.
Let's take a call here. Miriam is calling from New Orleans. You're on the air, Miriam.
Hi, Magna. I'm a millennial and definitely an online shopper. What I've realized is that because it's so convenient to get my goods from Amazon or from Instagram, Shopify, that when I want an experience, I'm actually going to locally owned small businesses, boutiques in town. And I'm wondering if that's a trend that you've seen. Like, I don't go to Target anymore. I get all that online. And then if I want an experience, I'm going to go frequent a local business instead.
I see. Miriam, great question. Let me turn that to Alana Samuel. So Alana, Miriam's cell phone was a little shaky there, but she was saying if there's something that she wanted to have an experience around buying, that she did find herself going to local retailers versus sort of, I don't know, the commodity stuff that she might get online.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why you're seeing a resurgence in local and independently owned bookstores. You know, people want to go to the bookstores for events, for community, and maybe they'll buy books there that they wouldn't have bought online because they didn't know about. So I think retailers, brick and mortar retailers who offer some sort of experience, whether it be events or recommendations or, you know, if you're a Whole Foods, maybe you're offering a happy hour or something. Those are actually going to, you know, gain in popularity, I think.
Yeah. Let's go to Britt, who's calling from... Oh, sorry, was that you, William, who you wanted to jump in there?
I just wanted to jump in there really quickly and just to say that, you know, what we're finding is we've been working with online bloggers and we are doing in-store events. So we're giving people a reason to get out from behind their computers. And we just recently we get a lot of donations of wedding dresses, for example, and we just did a bridal shower event where we had 300 wedding dresses, and people lined up outside of the store, women with their mothers, to come in to purchase with their wedding dresses. Because, you know, wedding dress you buy once, right? And if you get divorced, you usually don't reuse the same wedding dress that you had before. And so there's kind of a one-time purchase, and we're creating experiences so that people, again, can get in from behind their computers and have actually interaction.
Right. April Lane Benson, that's my chance to turn back to you here because, again, you're a psychologist who studies and treats compulsive buying disorder. You heard William Rogers there say that there are ways to coax people from, you know, from behind their computers and back into the real world. Does that give you some hope?
It does. The idea of having experiences like that, that bridal show is just brilliant. And I think it is a way of fostering community, and that's what we all need. That's why the independent bookstores are such a great option now.
Yeah. You know, let's go to Britt, who's calling from Shiraz, South Carolina. You're on the air, Britt.
Hi, Meghna.
Hey, how you doing? Do you shop more online now?
Well, it's kind of a yes and a no answer. I am a blue collar millennial, you know, so I have to sweat for my money. You know, I do a lot of backbreaking work. So I like to put my money to where I can get the best value. You know, I will go to the Goodwill and I will go to these other places, but I also check online because a lot of times you can find good deals online and it saves you time and it saves you effort. You know, we've already talked about having them delivered and everything, but also I'm kind of stuck in a rock and a hard place because I'm from a town with less than 5,000 people. So you also have to consider buying from small businesses, you know, just to keep your local economy going.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to put in my two cents from a millennial, you know. First of all, I don't have that much money. And second, I have to find a good value so I can stretch it as far as I can.
Okay, Britt, so let me just ask you a quick question here. I take your point. I'm really glad that you called in because, again, like, you know, when we talk about people spending more, we have to talk about, you know, the people who maybe don't have that much more money to spend. So are you saying that online shopping has sort of helped you make ends meet or has helped you get more value for your money or not? I'm not quite clear on that.
It has helped in some areas. You know, I kind of have to shop twice. I'll go to the store and then I'll buy the things that I can find for cheaper there, but I'm also checking online. So I guess in short, yes, it has helped me stretch a dollar further.
All right. Britt, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Louise, who's calling from Atlanta, Georgia. You're on the air, Louise.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm still conflicted about online shopping, though, but let me know what you think.
I live in Atlanta, Georgia. I was so surprised to hear you talk about this because yesterday, I'm a senior, and I'm also a Goodwill shopper, but yesterday, I had to buy concrete for a project I'm doing at home, and I was at the store looking for the concrete, and it just, like, I just said to myself, this is crazy. Amazon needs to up their game. There's no reason why I should be walking up and down this aisle looking for concrete. So I love online shopping. I'm new to it, and I just, you know, want to buy everything offline.
Louise, thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate it. One more here. Chris is calling from Frederick, Maryland. You're on the air, Chris.
Hi, Meghna. I just wanted to say about the compulsive shopping online. Something I have talked to people about that is helpful is that you can shop online, fill up your basket, daydream, dream about this beautiful dress, whatever, research everything, and at the end of the time, just empty your basket. And believe it or not, that's been very helpful for a lot of people that I've known.
Also a strategy there. Chris, thank you so much for your call. April Lane Benson, what do you think about that?
I think it's a great strategy. Anything to create a pause between the impulse to buy and the action of buying. What I like to do is have people ask themselves the following six questions. Why am I here? How do I feel? Do I need this? What if I wait? How will I pay for it? Where will I put it? And if you can answer those questions to your satisfaction, it's probably not a compulsive purchase.
Wow. So, you know, if I may, I just want to switch gears with all three of you here just for a minute, because there's something in Alana's article in The Atlantic that I keep coming back to, and I want to get your thoughts on it. And Alana, it's when you wrote that, for example, on college campuses, specifically, you talked about Michigan State, that when the 16,000 students who live in dorms there move out at the end of the academic year, they leave behind 147,946 pounds of goods, clothing, towels, appliances when they move out. It's a 40% increase from 2016. Now, you know, I don't necessarily want to talk about the challenges that Michigan State has and what they want to, how they deal with all that stuff. But it gets me thinking about how I feel like I'm going to sound like an old fuddy-duddy, but I feel like online shopping has helped create, because it's cheap and easy, a really disposable mindset. Right? Like we just, it's so easy to buy things that don't last very long that we look around and all of a sudden we just presume that nothing in our environment is going to last very long. So just throw it away. And we don't feel guilty about it anymore. Has it reduced our tolerance or increased our tolerance for these kinds of things? Whereas maybe what we should be looking for is perhaps slightly more expensive, but better made things?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. And I think, you know, this isn't just online shopping. This is also the globalization of manufacturing. So, you know, 50 years ago, a lot of the stuff we bought was made in America. Now it's made somewhere where the cost of living is a lot lower, so it can be a lot cheaper. And you'll get something and, you know, it's really cheap. And so you kind of think, oh, I'll just use this for a little bit and I'm going to toss it. You know, the shirts that you buy now maybe get holes in them more quickly, or, you know, the cords you get wear out more quickly. And so, you know, I think it's online shopping coupled with this, you know, huge surge in really cheap goods that's making us have this disposable mindset and kind of not value things as much as we used to.
Yeah. April, is that you?
It's called, yes, it's called fast fashion. And things are manufactured with the idea that they're disposable. Luckily, there is light at the end of the tunnel, I think. There's the Fashion Revolution is a big organization that came into being after the tragic fire in Bangladesh 5 years ago. And their mission is to make sure there is transparency all along the garment making cycle.
Yeah. William Rogers, let me get your view here, because I guess what I'm getting at is I don't love the idea of my kids, for example, growing up in a world where everything they look at, they just think it's something I can throw away. No big deal. I mean, you're in the business of keeping things useful for a longer time.
Yeah. And I 100% agree with you. I have two sons as well, and they there's a lot of folks who sort of hold that attitude now. And I think that it's a problem, because the truth is that what we want to be able to do is we want to be able to keep things in use for a long time. And we want it to be able to be reused and recycled over and over again so that we keep it out of the landfills for as long as possible. And I think that when you have manufacturers who are making things in fast fashion is a big problem because, you know, you wear it three times or five times, and then you're supposed to dispose of it. And that means that those items typically cannot be reused. And so we need to, there are technologies that are coming up to sort of, you know, there's rags, we can make things into rags and other things. But I think manufacturers have a responsibility to, at the beginning of this cycle, to make items that can be reused.
Mm. Now, there's a twist to all this, as there is to every story. We just got about a minute left here to go. William Rogers, do I have this right? If I look down deep enough on Amazon's sellers list, I'm going to find Goodwill. Is Goodwill selling things online too?
You've got it. We have an e-commerce business where we're training lots of folks, and we absolutely have a robust e-commerce business both on Amazon and eBay where we are selling some of the higher quality used items that we receive.
See, so nothing's ever purely good or purely bad. It's just how you use it, right? Alana Samuels, we've got a minute to go here. I'm going to give you the last word today. I mean, in the research that you did for writing this article, do you think, are we headed towards a planet where, you know, we're going to rely on Wall-Es to help us throw all the stuff away that we're buying all the time? Is that inevitable?
Well, I hope that more people will be able to kind of get that same experience out of online buying, that dopamine hit and buy used stuff, you know, from Goodwill or, you know, from somewhere else. And I hope that, you know, devices will be made to last longer and clothes will be made to last longer. But I think, you know, until we figure out how to make people stop shopping as much for buying stuff they don't need and also buying used stuff, we're kind of heading that way for the time being.
Yeah. I mean, again, at the risk of sounding like an old cadre, I will say that for all the craftspeople out there, there is beauty in the wonderfully high quality made thing. And maybe, you know, every once in a while, instead of buying the one for $5.99 on Amazon, you ought to look for someone who makes something similar. It might cost you a little bit more, but it'll last you a whole lot longer. Alana Samuels, staff writer at The Atlantic. Her article is We Are All Accumulating Mountains of Things. We are linked to it at onpointradio.org. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And April Lane Benson, psychologist who specializes in the treatment of compulsive buying disorder. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for doing the show.
And William Rogers, president and CEO of Goodwill San Francisco, San Mateo, and Marin in California. Real pleasure to have you on, William Rogers. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Well, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.